Some of you are going to find this a bit incredulous, but here's something that federal, state, and local governments all tell us to do that we should actually listen to. Eat more fruits and vegetables. You've heard about the health benefits of increasing plant-based nutrients into your diet, but how can you easily consume all the fruits and veggies needed? Well, it's easy. By adding grown American superfood and essential vitamins plus immunity into your meals. Grown American superfood and essential vitamins plus immunity is a power blend that has 31 fruits and vegetables in every scoop. Organic vegetables, super greens, super fruits, and super sprouts. It is fortified with essential vitamins plus an immunity boost. And right now, you can get a free 2-week supply of grown American superfood and essential vitamins plus immunity by just paying $8.95 for the shipping and handling. And not only that, you'll also get a free frother to quickly whip up your healthy and nutritious grown American drink. Go to grownamericansuperfood.com/John and order today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the John Fugelsang Podcast.
Oh my. Hello, Senator Gallego. This is SiriusXM Progress. I'm John Fugelsang. Welcome to Channel 127 After Dark. For the next 3 hours, we'll be coming at you with music and fun and facts and empathy and something resembling comedy. We are here to help you put this beast of a day to bed. Let's wrap it up thinking about the stories that matter, not worrying about the future, but realizing that we can handle whatever comes, and sometimes without medication, we can. Saturday night, we are back on tour in Minneapolis at the wonderful, legendary Pantages Theater. It's going to be great. Stephanie Miller, Hal Sparks, Frangela, and myself. It is our first show ever. Now that we have partnered with Live Nation, come on down. It's going to be a party. I'll be appearing tomorrow on AM 950 in Minneapolis with the great Matt McNeil, a terrific radio show host in the progressive sphere, because there are still progressive terrestrial radio stations out there. Go see Adam Sank tomorrow night. If you're in New York City, go see Adam, our good friend, at Bad Dates at the Stonewall. I saw it over the weekend. I can't stop raving about it. Our executive producer is Chris Hauselt, running this monster out of the South Carolina studios. The great Thea Harper is our producer from Brooklyn. I come to you from a basement somewhere near Harlem in Manhattan, and we are so glad to have you with us. Kind of a crazy day. We are going to have Professor Corey Bretschneider joining us tonight. We'll also be talking with Keith Price, our comedy daddy, in hour number three. The parents of that Oxford, Michigan school shooter were sentenced to 10 to 15 years in jail for their parental complicity in the crime, at least 10 years. And the judge said they didn't take steps that could have prevented a runaway train. I mean, it was the killing of four students in 2021. We're going to talk about this with Professor Bretschneider, but to me, this is one of the most shocking verdicts that I did not expect to happen. This is the sort of thing that will save lives. There are people whose lives will be saved because other people will take more care to lock up their weaponry around their disturbed children after today's ruling and sentencing. Missouri's attorney general filed a lawsuit challenging Joe Biden's new student debt relief plan. We'll talk about that. Officials from Hamas have rejected the latest ceasefire and hostage release deal put forth by Israel because, of course, they have. For the second time in 2 days, an appeals court shut down Donald Trump's latest attempt to delay his hush money trial. He's now, by the way, just so you know, he's now at the phase of suing the judge. He's going to sue the judge to try to drag this thing out from happening in, 6 days, isn't it? Yeah. Ooh, man, it's going to happen. Also, the Census Bureau says half of America's 46 million foreign-born population live in just four states, California, Texas, Florida, and New York. Half are also naturalized citizens, having completed citizen exams and oaths. And Cowboy Carter is officially a number one record, Beyonce's eighth. She is now the first black woman to ever go to number one on Billboard's country albums chart. We are at 866-997-4748. Let's do a show. And hello, Senator Gallego. Let me tug on your coat about something here. You know, we were talking about this on the last show. Right after, today's the day after Donald Trump thought he had finally solved the Republican Party's abortion problem. Didn't he? I mean, last night he gave that little speech and everybody thought, OK, well, this might be it. You ran originally saying it should go to the states. Now you're trying to get around the fact that you're responsible for a really popular law being rescinded and your party's having its ass handed to him in every state where it's been on the ballot. So he came out and said, go ahead to the states. I mean, he pissed off the two groups he needs the most with that statement last night. He infuriated the evangelicals who are finally realizing they've been played by this clown. And he doesn't care if there are abortions going on in states, because how dare a president allow women and their doctors to make that choice? And he really pissed off the independents that he needs because they don't want to see abortion bans in any state. And by the way, Trump still hasn't said if he would sign a federal ban if it ever landed on his desk. He didn't comment on that. And he's hiding from any mention of mifepristone. I mean, where do you stand on banning mifepristone, Mr. President? He's not asked by any media about the women who are bleeding out in hospital parking lots. He hides from all of it, and the media doesn't ask him. He began his little speech by boasting that he had ended Roe, and then he lied and said that everyone wanted that. And then he lost the evangelicals when he said the state should decide, because that's him saying legal abortion is acceptable to him. And then he lost the independents when he said the state should decide. And then he told a lie about babies being born and then murdered to try to win the lunatics back. Didn't work. This man ushered in the end of Roe v. Wade. This man, this reality show clown, this racist landlord from Queens. He is the reason the National Protection of Women's Reproductive Rights is no more, and now his party is paying for it. They elected the clown. The clown turned their party into a circus. He's terrified of what he's done. And he thought last night, he really thought he had done something. Nipped it in the bud, found a Solomonic solution to the incredibly unpopular laws caused by him. And today, the Arizona Supreme Court did him no favors. One of the most important states in this upcoming election now has the strictest abortion ban in the country. It didn't when we woke up today. But in an historic decision, the AZ Supreme Court ruled that the state has to adhere to a 123-year-old penal code provision that bans any abortions except in cases where it's necessary to save a pregnant person's life. An 1864 abortion ban that most likely will close down clinics in the state. 1864. 56 years before women could vote. 110 years before women could apply for credit cards in their own name. Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs, she put out an executive order last year giving all the power to enforce abortion laws to the state attorney general. And the current attorney general is a Democrat, Chris Mays. They vowed not to enforce any abortion bans. I mean, the court ruled that this 1864 law will soon be enforceable, but the state's attorney general said she will not endorse it. So Karine Jean-Pierre was asked at the podium today to give the White House's initial remarks on the abortion decision from the Arizona Supreme Court. Give a listen.
So I want to start by addressing some devastating and alarming news from the Arizona Supreme Court. With today's decision, millions of Arizonians will soon face an even more extreme and dangerous abortion ban than they did before. This Arizona law, which was initially enacted in 1864, more than 150 years ago, fails to protect women even when their health is at risk, or in horrific cases of rape or incest. There are now 21 extreme state abortion bans in effect across the country. One-third of all women of reproductive age now live in a state with an abortion ban. And all of these bans, including the one upheld today, that was upheld by the Arizona Supreme Court, are a direct result of the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade. When the president's predecessor handicapped three Supreme Court justices to overturn Roe v. Wade, it paved the way for the chaos and confusion we're seeing play out across the country today. President Biden and Vice President Harris will continue to stand with the vast majority of Americans who support a woman's right to choose.
She ain't lying. I mean, think about what's going on here. The state's Democratic Attorney General is saying she's not going to enforce any abortion bans. That's going to be challenged by the county attorneys. But really, it's all about the voters of Arizona, because there's going to be a ballot measure to protect abortion rights this November. Any state can outlaw abortion now, thanks to the host of Celebrity Apprentice. 14 states already have. Now, in fairness, this law in Arizona, the 1864 law, it was codified again in 1901. Arizona still wasn't a state then, but they codified it one more time in 1913 after Arizona became a state. And it allows rapists in Arizona to pick out the mothers of their children. Let's say that again. The Arizona Supreme Court today decided that rapists will be able to pick out the mothers of their future children. That's what it is. That's what this sort of thing does. It also guarantees that if a man wants to rape his daughter or stepdaughter, it's not going to be legal, but he will be allowed to be the parent of his own grandchild. Thank you, Arizona Republicans. This mandates 2 to 5 years in prison for anyone who aids in abortion. And again, they had a law from the same era requiring at least 1 year in prison, but that got repealed 3 years ago. Now, what this means is Carrie Lake is the weather vane. Carrie Lake is most likely the Republican Senate nominee. And if you're crazy, you think she's the governor right now. So 2 years ago in 2022, she said this almost total ban, except for the life of the mother, is a great law, and said it would set an example for other states. Today, Carrie Lake showed just how scared the Republicans are. It's kind of the entire party in microcosm. She released a statement I'm still trying to make sense of. She said she disagreed with the Supreme Court. Okay, that's how scary it is. 2 years ago, she supported a full ban. Now she said she opposed the Supreme Court's ruling. And she first denounced the old law from 1864. But she did support that just last fall. But then she said she opposed the ruling by the Supreme Court today. And then she demanded that Governor Katie Hobbs and the Republicans in the legislature come up with an immediate common sense solution that Arizonans can support. In other words, she said nothing. She just kind of tried to bully the governor with words. And then she said the decision will be up to the voters in the ballot initiative that's going to be on the November ballot, which she didn't say she is against. She said, and I'm going to quote her, she said, "This is a very personal issue that should be determined by each individual state and her people," as opposed to, say, each individual woman and her doctor. Josh Marshall at Talking Points Memo, he summed it up perfectly. He wrote, "So let's review. Lake opposes the law she had consistently said she supported. She denounces the court decision, which ruled that the old law is in effect. She thinks the decision should be left to the states. She also opposes abortion. Also, Arizona is a state." This is what they've got to deal with now. They know how unpopular it is. They know that a law like this could turn Arizona blue. And this is 24 hours after Donald Trump says it should all be left up to the states anyway. Amar Moussa from the Biden campaign said this is what leaving it to the states looks like. So Arizona voters are going to get to vote on this in November to protect abortion rights through the 24th week of pregnancy. And that's going to hurt Donald Trump. And that's going to hurt Carrie Lake, because the power now shifts to the voters. And abortion rights have not lost anything since the end of Roe, whenever those decisions have been up to the voters instead of the right-wing men in dresses on various courts. So for a preview of what the Democrats might be saying, here is the immediate statement about 30 minutes later today in the United States Senate, by Arizona's own, the astronaut senator himself, Mark Kelly. Give a listen to Senator Kelly's initial thoughts and just imagine the ads they have handed the Democratic Party.
I want to say a few words about the disastrous decision by the Arizona Supreme Court today to reinstate a total ban on abortion. From a law that was passed in 1864, before Arizona was a state, actually 48 years before Arizona became a state. Senator Stabenow mentioned one out of three women live in a state that have an extreme abortion ban. Well, about 30 minutes ago, that number went up. This is going to criminalize doctors for doing their jobs, and it's going to have a devastating effect on the health and freedom of women in Arizona. It's going to put lives at risk. Now, this law may have been written 160 years ago, but it's only being reinstated now because of politicians who worked to overturn Roe v. Wade. In fact, in the Supreme Court ruling today, it mentioned the Dobbs decision 22 times. This is devastating for women in Arizona. I've got a daughter and granddaughter in Arizona. This is not who we are as Arizonans. And I refuse to allow Arizona to become a state where doctors are going to be afraid to practice, to just do their jobs. Women deserve the right to make these decisions on their own, not politicians in Washington making them for them. So I'm going to continue to work to fix this. But I've got to, you know, stress that this is a really sad day for the state of Arizona.
Senator Mark Kelly. Now, Florida voters are going to get to weigh in on their constitutional amendment to protect abortion rights until 24 to 28 weeks after Ron DeSantis signed that six-week ban. That's on the ballot. It's going to be driving turnout in huge numbers. In Montana, Democratic groups are trying to get a state amendment protecting abortion rights on their ballot because John Tester is one of the most vulnerable members in the Senate, and this would help drive turnout when he needs it. And in Nevada, they're working to put up an amendment to protect abortion rights through 28 weeks. At this point, I mean, Wisconsin is the state Biden is doing the best polling in, and those cities are not going to go right. In Pennsylvania, he's second best. He's doing good in Georgia. And look for the polling in Arizona to be very interesting after this. So this is Donald Trump's worst nightmare. And it's the sort of thing that, you know, we should be focusing on, like his racism. I don't know if you heard what happened over the weekend, but he was making these comments to these billionaires in Palm Beach where he said he wanted immigrants to come from nice countries, you know, like Denmark, Sweden. He said that. Remember the shithole countries? Remember? This time he says, why can't we have people coming from the nice countries? I'm trying to be nice. And the crowd of millionaires are laughing. He's talking about white countries, right? You understand? He demonizes migrants from Africa, from Asia, from the Middle East, from Latin America, Central America. He uses words for those people, like, you know, infestation, vermin. He lies about their crime rates. And then he talks about the nice people. Denmark, Switzerland. How about Norway? Those people are allowed to come here. That's nice. To Donald Trump, nice means white. Growing up on Long Island, I had friends' parents who thought the same exact thing. And this barely made the news. It barely made the news at all because it's old news that Donald Trump is a racist. No one's shocked by it anymore. He said it to a room full of gazillionaires. They're exploiting racism to get their own tax cuts. It's all about fueling xenophobia, and that's the point. He has to keep his base angry and mad, and a nonstop IV drip of umbrage. But this is at a $50 million fundraiser. At least they claimed it was $50 million. But the media is afraid to call him racist. So he gets away with it. He said there were people coming in from prisons and jails, coming in from just unbelievable places and countries, countries that are a disaster. Meanwhile, Joe Biden is doing shit. His infrastructure and clean energy bills are pumping $500 billion into projects around the country. And this funding allows Joe Biden to announce all these different things that are happening, winning voters in town after town after town. $10 billion in grants and investments in Michigan and North Carolina, and $46 billion spread across Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Nevada, Arizona, and Georgia. What do those seven states have in common? Oh, yeah, they're all swing states. $56 billion. And as of March, they've announced a total of $478 billion in projects from the Inflation Reduction Act and the bipartisan infrastructure law. So stuff's getting done. And even Jennifer Granholm, the energy secretary, my old buddy from Current TV, says, I hate to acknowledge this as a former governor of Michigan, but we know that all these battery investments are going to the red states. See, Donald Trump keeps promising that he will undo the Inflation Reduction Act. He's saying he'll end it. It turns out, though, it's building factories. People are getting jobs because of it. And as much as Republicans are criticizing these programs now, they are not going to want to see that investment in their states go away. Jen Granholm was in Michigan and announced a billion-dollar loan guarantee to restart a nuclear facility and visited a Heinz Craft Relish factory that got a $13 million grant. On top of this, Biden is giving out more grants for the Chips and Science Act. He was just in Arizona, and they just announced one of the world's best and largest chip manufacturers, TSMC, is going to build a third plant in Arizona and begin production of the world's most advanced semiconductors there by the end of this decade. See, we begin with Arizona and the politics. We end with Arizona and the results. This expansion is part of Biden's efforts to bring semiconductor manufacturing to America instead of overseas. And this company, they are from Taiwan, but they're going to get $6 billion from the CHIPS Act and build semiconductors here and hire Americans to do the work. That's results. And we haven't even gotten to the student loan cancellation yet. Pay attention to who's actually doing stuff, and pay attention to who's making a lot of noise. Because while Biden's doing all this, Donald Trump wants you to pay for his rape lawyer, and his criminal fraud lawyer, and his insurrection lawyer, and his theft of classified documents lawyer, and his RICO conspiracy lawyer, and his campaign finance fraud lawyer. Ooh, that's next week. We'll be right back in just a second with your calls and Professor Corey Brettschneider. This is SiriusXM Progress. Do not go away.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season two is out now from Lemonada Media.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
We are back at 866-997-GRIT. Special Counsel Jack Smith urged the Supreme Court this week to reject Donald Trump's position that he gets absolute immunity in the federal election interference case. The prosecutors are arguing that criminal law applies to even a president. See, crazy thing. The founding fathers, it turns out they didn't want a king. And this 66-page filing from Jack Smith lays out a series of arguments that all blow up Trump's claims that a president can't break the law and is immune from criminal prosecution for any laws they might have broken ever in their lives. To break down the enormous amount of stupid here and the enormous amount of risk that the Supreme Court might not mind that it's stupid is the great Professor Corey Brettschneider. Since the 2016 election, you've been reading his great analysis of the Trump administration for Politico, the New York Times, and Time magazine. He teaches in the poli-sci department at Brown University. You can get his book, The Oath in the Office, A Guide to the Constitution for Future Presidents, at your favorite bookstore. And I can't wait for the new one. I want my hardcover. Professor Brettschneider, welcome back to SiriusXM.
Thanks so much, John. Looking forward to the conversation as always.
Thank you, sir, as am I. So it seems, I mean, kind of embarrassing for Jack Smith that he has to make this filing to the Supreme Court, doesn't it? I mean, he seems to be a bit extra stressed out and agitated that this reality show clown is making him do this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's seldom the case that the Constitution in its text and its words makes something clear. And I had to actually just read it again to myself before we started to talk to confirm it was as obvious as I know it to be. And what it talks about is the idea that after an impeachment, that the person who's convicted in an impeachment or who's tried an impeachment trial is subject to criminal punishment. It basically just says that. So why we're even talking about this is beyond me. There are serious issues about whether sitting presidents can be indicted, question about civil immunity, but this one. And you
Professor,
know,
is it really beyond you? I think you understand, Corey. I don't think this one is beyond you. I think you know exactly why this is happening and why we're discussing it. This is Donald Trump's efforts to delay this thing a little bit longer of the week.
That's right. And what's so sick is even though there's no issue here, that some members of this court, you know, at least four members, are helping him do it, and they know there's no way that they're going to say that former presidents are immune from all crimes. That would be ridiculous. Yeah. And you know, give carte blanche to, you know, the license to kill to every single former president. Sounds like an insane cartoon of these former presidents going around committing crimes with impunity. There's no way the court's going to say that. But yet he has sympathizers on this court. We know who they are, Clarence Thomas, chief among them. And yes, they're not acting as a court. They're acting as a political partisan body that's trying to protect their candidate. And wow, I just watching this, just to lay it out even clearer, when they want to take something and decide it fast, they can do so. In the Colorado case, they decided that thing very fast. And here it's just delay, delay, delay. And my worry is that after the oral arguments, they'll find ways to keep delaying this thing, even though the answer is clear as day that no, former presidents don't have immunity for all crimes.
I mean, Jack Smith, the man seems to be seething as he types that Trump suggests that unless a criminal statute expressly names the president, the statute does not apply. That radical suggestion, which would free the president from virtually all criminal law, even crimes such as bribery, murder, treason and sedition, is unfounded. I mean, it's nonsense, right, Corey? And the scary part is that you're right. There's four justices that'll probably go along with this and pretend that they're being all Solomonic and start having the hearings on April 25th and wait as long as they can to issue the ruling declining this because they're in on the delay tactic, too.
Right. I mean, they're not going to embarrass themselves so badly that they find in his favor and that they claim that this somehow. And they know, too, that that'll extend out to, as was said in the lower court, that Joe Biden would have the ability to order, you know, the assassination of his political rival. They don't want that. So they've got to figure out a way to not say the crazy thing and still protect their candidate. And, you know, what a sad state that. You know, a constitutional law professor has to get on the radio and say the obvious, which is
I want to ask you about
legal.
That, Corey. Yeah, can I ask you about that? Because I want to ask about on a personal level, because it's so silly that any of us have to talk about this. And I guess it's great as a civics lesson and as a you know, it's nice to learn about the law beyond Law and Order episodes, I guess. but it does seem like I'm fascinated by how your peers and people in the legal world regard this. I mean, does it just kind of seem overwhelmingly to people on the inside that Trump going through this pantomime, that somehow he's immune? I mean, isn't that tantamount to a guilty plea? Isn't that tantamount to saying, no, it's legal if I do it, so I did it? To me, it sounds like a backhanded confession.
You know, I think that there are matters of law. There are serious issues, you know, about whether or not a sitting president can be indicted, as I said. And there is an argument, you know, to be made, possibly it's a huge stretch, that when it comes to official duties, presidents are immune from civil liability. They can't be sued for official duties. That's the Nixon versus Fitzgerald. And so you could imagine somebody saying, okay, if it was really an official official duty. They were carrying out some specific act of the president authorized, within their powers, and they were acting in good faith. Maybe there's immunity there. So there, it's not that there's zero truth to what he's saying, but what's happened here is he's extended that. What is the official act that he claims to be having pursued? It's the
right.
It's January 6th. It's the insurrection. That's not an official act. That's a crime, and
totally
and one
true.
That's the opposite of an official act. It's an
Actually, Corey, he was trying to stop the steal. Corey, as the president, he was trying to stop the steal.
Yeah.
That was a very official act, sir. I mean,
that is exactly his argument, and saying it in the way that conveys its absurdity is exactly appropriate. But that's what he's got. So, what are we left with when the court is taking seriously these nonsense arguments and refusing? It's one thing if they want to take it seriously and dispose of it quickly, but it's the slowing it down that's causing the crisis. And there is, as many people see it, a crisis in teaching this subject of constitutional law, because you have a court charged with carrying it out, with making constitutional law, that's disregarding any of the most basic common sense and textual parts of the law. And, we've got to just call it what it is, that this is a court not acting as a court.
Let me just ask you one last question on this trifling topic, Corey, because I'm so fascinated by it. It's so petulant, and I can only imagine how, for a serious scholar like yourself, this must be maddening. It's like a news anchor having to talk about O.J. or Monica Lewinsky every day. I get it.
Yeah.
But, Judge Tanya Chutkan, she already rejected this argument before Christmas, saying a president doesn't have a lifelong get-out-of-jail-free pass. The Federal Appeals Court rejected this whole argument in February.
Right.
And they said president has become citizen Trump. So I guess our foreign allies are watching this and they're saying, wait, all these other courts are already saying he can't do this. Why is he still trying to get the Supreme Court to go along with it? I mean, clearly, this is just theater.
Yeah. And I think, think about if we were watching a foreign country, Latin American country, for instance, who had a president that was claiming this kind of immunity and his appointees were protecting him. I don't think that any analyst of that situation would say, oh, wow, this is, a wonderful democracy. We would say that's a banana republic. That's a non-functioning democracy. And that's what we're starting to look like, too. And I think if we try to take the perspective of an outsider looking in at our own system, we start to see the crisis that is this Supreme Court. And, it was for a long time, I think, a balance, and there were arguments, but it wasn't this partisan pursuit. And now that we know how involved Thomas is with Trump through his wife, that we saw Kavanaugh mm-hmm. groveling when he was appointed about how wonderful this president that turned out to try to have a self coup is, it's just hard to trust this court and to believe in constitutional law as it's executed by this court. I will say one other thing, which is that I'm so glad that we continue our conversations, because when the courts have abandoned the Constitution, it's about the people's, it becomes the people's obligation to take it into their own hands. And that's what we're all doing in watching this and not standing for it.
I completely agree. And it's one of the reasons why one of the best parts of this job for me has been getting to be the beneficiary of your expertise and brilliance and compassion for the people of this country, Corey. I really do admire what you do and how you express it. I want to shift to the Arizona Supreme Court, however, because I don't think any of us woke up this morning realizing that they were going to ban abortion today before lunchtime. And this once again goes back to what a big deal it was. That even though Donald Trump got the fewest votes, he still won in 2016 and overturned Roe v. Wade. We are going to be living, and millions of women are going to be struggling with the after effects of the Electoral College and Donald Trump for generations to come. Were you surprised when you heard about this 1864 statute? There wasn't even a state until 1911. What were your initial thoughts, Professor?
Yeah, I wish I could say that it's shocking or surprising, but on this one, unlike the previous topic that we were talking about, I don't find it shocking at all that once the court got rid of the protection of the right to an abortion, you start to go back to all the draconian laws that have been passed by states, and this is just one of them. And, there is a belief among some members of this country that abortion is murder, period, and that means no exceptions. And so when it comes to the life of the mother, there's no reason to choose the mother over the fetus. When it comes to brutal rapes and pregnancies that result, it doesn't matter that the woman is a crime victim and that the result of the crime is the pregnancy. It's a matter of, you know, black and white, life and death, and too bad. And that's what getting rid of this fundamental right. And again, you know, I don't want to defer to the court on this. I just believe they're wrong. Our Constitution is all about the idea of autonomy and choice making free from government intervention. That is the main principle of the Constitution, not just any idea. And once you get rid of that, and the court, I believe, didn't just get rid of abortion, it got rid of the fundamental idea that individual autonomy is embedded in the Constitution.
That's right.
It
Thank
opens
you for
the way
that.
To not to democracy, but to these draconian laws.
It
really
puts
us back 200 years.
Yeah. And, you know, it's also strange because we've talked a lot about the political repercussions of all of this, but these are the legal repercussions. Donald Trump was saying last night, the state should decide. Well, right. The people didn't get to decide. This wasn't a ballot referendum. This was the Arizona Supreme Court. This was a bunch of men using a law from 56 years before women had the right to vote to decide that women no longer have autonomy in the state of Arizona and that rapists can now pick out the mothers of their future children.
Yeah, I'd love to see the DNC or if listeners are out there wanting to make this mem. The 19th century people decide. That's the idea. You wipe away the right, and all of a sudden these laws are on the books from well over 100 years ago, and you know, almost 200 years ago, and that's who's deciding. People literally from two centuries ago. And what did they believe in? Well, they didn't believe in human rights in any of the ways that we think of it now, and they didn't believe in the principle that was embedded in the Constitution. There wasn't a court willing to protect it. And so, you know, we're returning to this early sad moment in the Republic where our rights were very at odds with what our principles were.
Indeed. Now, the state attorney general has said that she's not going to enforce this in any way, but she'll be challenged by that, right? Counties will go after her and sue her on that.
Yeah, I applaud her, and I think that prosecutors have an obligation to not bring cases that are grievous injustices. But I don't think she's right when it comes to the question of what the law in Arizona is. There is no protection. There is a criminalization of doctors performing abortions. That's what the law seems to say. And short of revocation of the law, she's going to have a lot of trouble avoiding enforcing something that seems so black and white. And let's remember, too, that this isn't just some opinion. The Supreme Court of Arizona has said the same.
Mm-hmm. What do you make of Donald Trump saying he's for states' rights on this issue? Because I'm not convinced he really is. I want to hear someone ask him, would you sign a national abortion ban if it was put on your desk? And of course, he hasn't weighed in on mifepristone, as we know.
Right. And, I think that you can never believe that Trump has any principles that are consistent over time or policies even. He just says things that meet the moment. And he clearly had an advisor that came to him and said that national ban on abortion means you lose the election. And that's the last thing in the world he's going to accept. So he's going out saying this stuff about states' rights, and somebody's given him the slogan of the 10th Amendment, which says that any power is not granted to the federal government or reserved to the states. And so he's saying, okay, that's the issue until he's elected. And then you have a Congress that passes a law saying no abortions anywhere. He's campaigned as a pro-life person. All of a sudden that 10th Amendment stuff is, he won't remember it, and it'll just disappear. And I think we've got to see this person for who he is, a craven political animal willing to do whatever it means to increase his polls at the moment. And
and the same craven animal just had a New York appeals court reject his latest effort to delay his hush money criminal trial. Corey, by the time you and I speak next week, the first trial will have begun.
It's fascinating. The New York case in some ways is the weakest. I mean, think about it. We've got one case about trying to have a coup and to take over a country illegally. This is about falsification of business records with an intent of trying to violate campaign, evade campaign finance. It's serious, but it's not as serious as the other stuff. Yet it's the, you know, the local court and the judge who seems determined to see justice done. And yes, this could be the first trial that results in a conviction and prison term. And now we're really in a constitutional crisis because there's nothing in the Constitution that bars somebody from serving while in prison. And as absurd an example as that sounds, I mean, that is a real possibility at this moment that we might have a sitting president of the United States who's been convicted of a crime. And, you know, I don't know if he'll be in Rikers and trying to make his phone calls from there, but we have to work that out.
Honestly, like, I've had to read up on Bobby Sands, you know, running for parliament from jail and winning when he was with the IRA back in the 70s. It's just incredible. Yeah. While I have you, Professor, it just for a moment, I'd love to get your take on this, to me, quite historic ruling of the Crumbleys. The parents of the Oxford, Michigan school shooter. They were sentenced to 10 to 15 years in prison for their parental complicity in the crime. These were people who actually bought him the automatic weapon he used to slaughter four students in 2021. Their house was filled with weapons that were not secure in any way, and they ignored many, many warning signs about his mental health. What kind of precedent may have been set today that the parents of a school shooter have been held liable?
Yeah, I don't think it's just that they were bad parents, as you say, that they were criminally negligent in allowing this minor access to guns. They seemed to know that this massacre was coming because they texted him, too, at some point, telling him not to do it. And, you know, what kind of constraint were they putting on guns that were being made available to somebody that was clearly not capable of handling those weapons? I guess my first thought is, you know, I certainly don't see anything wrong with this sentence. It seems appropriate. But how pathetic that as a country we're dealing with this policy issue, which is guns getting into the hands of children through the criminal law. That's the third best alternative, you know, at best. We should have strict gun control that requires a difficult showing in order to get a license, and that doesn't allow guns in the first place to get in the hands of people who are going to in turn just turn them over to minors. And you know, we've just got to keep that up of talking about the need for firm gun control regulation. Otherwise, you know, we risk losing the main thing that defines us as a society, which is that we don't have massive violence by citizens, that we have a government in control of weaponry that can result in death. And we're just from that.
This is the first kind of real positive action I've seen coming from the courts in years on this. I mean, there are peoples who will live because of this. There are parents who will be afraid of this verdict and lock up their firearms around their disturbed 20-year-olds. I mean, I have to believe that exponentially, this is more than just the beginning of a movement, that there are literally people whose lives will be saved because of this choice.
Yeah, and the criminal law, you know, is a blunt instrument, and I believe often it works, that if people know that they're going to suffer, they'll at least think twice about their actions, and I think that's a good thing. You know, and we, I guess, should be expanding on it. I would love to see us create liability for manufacturers who produce guns that result
Thank
in death.
Thank you.
Scare the hell out of these gun manufacturers, not just parents.
That's coming, isn't it?
Corey,
that's coming,
licenses.
Isn't it? That's going to happen, don't you think?
I believe that it certainly should. I mean, we'll see. If we have a Republican Congress, I think there's a good chance that they'll create an immunity for these gun manufacturers that will make that hard to overcome. And, you know, the NRA remains powerful, maybe not as unchecked as it was before. And I think with a Republican Congress and certainly this president, it'll be very hard to stop the constant massacres that seem to be happening throughout this country.
Professor Corey Brettschneider, it is always a pleasure and honor to have you with us, sir. What is the best way for our listeners to follow you and keep up with your work?
Well, thank you for plugging my book, The Presidents and the People, Five Leaders Who Threatened Democracy and the Citizens Who Fought to Defend It. And I would just ask people, order it from your local bookstore, check it out on online and Barnes & Nobles or Amazon and order a copy. July 2nd, it comes out.
Thank you so much, Corey. We'll be right back with your calls. This is Progress.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
So Joe Biden was talking today on the ways his budget is helping millions of Americans who make up the care economy. Home health aides, nurses, regular Americans taking care of sick and elderly family members. Give a listen to the president's remarks.
For everyone caring for a loved one, my budget would finally create a national paid family and medical leave program. Up to 12 weeks to care for a newborn, a sick loved one, or yourself without losing your income. Look, it's past time America caught up with the rest of the world on paid leave. And folks, all this helps families and it grows the economy. It grows the economy. And we can afford to do it. To put it another, we can't afford not to do it.
Of course, he's preaching to the punch yourself in the face with a hammer party, which prefers punching themselves in face with hammers at the ballot box. Now, like many recent appearances by the administration, a heckler interrupted Joe Biden during his remarks, condemning his policy on the Israel-Hamas war. The allegedly fragile Biden brushed aside the exchange.
It kept 225,000 child care workers sent, well, child care working centers open, giving parents an opportunity to get back to work. Well, I tell you what, you want to come make a speech or shush up, okay? I'm not messing around with him.
By the way, for the record, I support Biden's reelection. I also support, if you need to, heckling him in public about Palestine and Israel. 866-997-4748. Now, Biden just yesterday detailed a proposal that's been in the works for months after the Supreme Court rejected his first attempt at a mass student loan cancellation. This could eliminate at least some debt for more than 30 million Americans, but some potentially as soon as, this fall. Who knew? Now, Biden said what the Supreme Court did was a mistake, but he ordered the Education Department to come up with a new plan with a different legal authority. And the new proposal he rolled out is more targeted than his original let's just pardon it all plan. This focuses on five categories of borrowers for whom student debt is a major life obstacle. Now, it would cancel up to $20,000 in interest for Americans who now owe more than they originally borrowed. That's the widest reaching provision, and it would reset student loan balances for so many borrowers who've seen their debt grow and grow and grow because of the unpaid interest. All the debt would be canceled for borrowers repaying undergraduate loans 20 years or more, or 25 years for people with graduate school debt. Yes, I'm going to say that again. If you've been repaying your undergraduate loans for 20 years or more,
yes,
or your graduate school debt for 25 years or more, all debt would be canceled. I think this is huge. And the right wing will lie about this and say, well, why should I pay for your free college? Would I? No one paid for me to get free. It's not paying for anybody's free college. You groomed morons. It is paying for the unholy interest. OK, this interest that you are still paying on your loan. These degrees are long ago paid for. It's just saying you don't have to be penalized anymore paying this interest on it. It's really smart. It would provide relief to over 30 million borrowers. And again, they're going to start this before November. The elimination of unpaid interest for 23 million people and debt cancellation for loans in repayment for at least 20 years. And there's more than that. More than 4 million student loan borrowers could see their debt fully canceled under this proposal. And again, 10 million borrowers could get $5,000 or more in relief. So Trump, as I said, he wants you to pay for his rape lawyer, his criminal fraud lawyer, his insurrection lawyer, his stealing classified documents lawyer, the RICO lawyer, the campaign finance fraud lawyer. That one starts next week. We're at 866-997-GRIT. Let's go to the phones. And thank you guys so much for your patience on hold. Elizabeth in Texas, you're up first. Welcome. You're on Sirius XM.
Hey, John.
Hey.
How's it going?
It's better now. How are you?
Not too good. You know,
what's going on?
It's really, well, it's very sad that I can only call you when I'm have some courage.
Okay.
Anyway.
I know I'm really not, intimidating. I understand. I'm intimidating with my mean ways.
I'm not that most eloquent now. So,
okay.
Okay. The you put the abortion thing, and it's like, you know, don't exert your religious beliefs on me. So I want to get into the woo-woo, the religious beliefs.
Yeah, let's
so,
do it.
When I was a small child, 13 or 14, and like 73, and we had to choose a topic for debate. And I said, should abortion be illegal?
Okay.
And basically I was like, oh, abortion is bad. And why is abortion bad? And, oh by the way, I've changed or whatever. Anyway, so
I have too, but I appreciate people's good intentions and that people can evolve when they get more information and more awareness.
Yeah,
go on.
This was way back when. And the premise was, okay, you can kill animals and you can't kill human beings. So why not? What's the difference?
Mm-hmm.
So the difference is human beings have souls. So the question comes, why are, you know, when does the soul come into a human being? So we look at a thing. So this goes both to the beginning of life and to the end of life, and both the idiots and the sane can argue, you know. And basically, souls. Okay.
Yeah.
So when does the soul come in?
And every religion has a different opinion on that, on ensoulment.
Exactly. Absolutely. You know, this is just a different aspect from the Christian folks.
Oh, no, because for Christians, it's I think for Christians right now, the life begins, ensoulment begins, I believe, at foreplay, I think, or maybe fertilization. But they're right away in the Hebrew Bible,
Okay.
Go ahead.
But the Bible or whatever, you know, but the soul, when does the soul enter? And, you know, you look at things, is a caterpillar a butterfly? And all these other things.
Yeah.
But when does the soul enter? And it's all, you know, there are very different opinions. Some religions believe the soul doesn't enter until after like four weeks after birth, because that's when the child will, you know, look in your eyes.
That's correct.
I can't remember the rest of things. Anyway,
that's okay. You're doing good. You're doing great.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
Not at all. You're doing great.
Like I said, I only
You know, in the Jewish Bible, in the Torah, life begins with first breath, and there are others that believe that it begins after a baby's been alive for a couple of weeks. Either way, though, I mean, we happen to live in a country where religion has no say in our laws, and so I respect the argument. Yeah. I respect anybody of good faith. That just for me. I was raised to think abortion was wrong, not by my parents, but by the culture. I knew my parents only voted for pro-choice candidates, but I finally realized, wait a minute, it's none of my business. Like, it's none of my business, and it's none of the business. My religious faith and what my religion may or may not teach doesn't matter at all. It's not my body.
Well, wait, it does matter in law, because in law, you can kill animals. You can't kill human beings. Why can't you kill human beings? And the reason you can't kill human beings is because they have a soul.
Unless, of course, we decide we're going to execute them or bomb them, in which case we're very fine with ending those souls and stuffing out those lives, especially the more pro-life of our politicians, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, but, you know, looking at the issue of... You know, I mean, the law looks at the soul because you can look, you know, I mean, why can't we kill human beings, but we can kill animals?
Right. Right.
You know,
I think it's because the argument here is that a fetus is not a human being. It could become a human being one day, as an acorn could become an oak tree or an egg could become a chicken. And it's ultimately up to the decision of a woman what happens with her body and her doctor and not a bunch of conservative white men wearing black dresses.
And also at the end of life, when does the soul come in? When does the soul leave?
Yes, that's even more fascinating. We don't know when life begins. We don't know when life ends. I mean, some think that the hearing is the last part to go.
Yeah, this is something that is legislated, and it is. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Elizabeth,
thank you so much. I think you were probably a very good debater.
When I have a better.
Your breath is great. You're good at this. You should call into more shows. You're very good at this. I appreciate your voice. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Have a good one. 866-997-4748. Catherine in Florida. Welcome. You're on Sirius XM. Thank you for your patience on hold.
Oh, that's fine. I'm sorry, Mr. John. I had a different question, but after listening to Miss Elizabeth from Texas, I just wanted to say, Miss Elizabeth, thank you so much for your courageousness for calling in and trying to speak your piece, and Mr. John for answering.
I'm so happy. I mean, you know, if I had my way, every caller would be, you know, Mitch from Kent State all the time. It's so nice when new people call in, and people write me all the time and they say, like, oh, I'm too shy to call. And I don't want to hear that. Please. I'm a goofball. Please call
in. I think she's actually reaching out and trying to make decisions that maybe she has questions for. And I really admire her courage for speaking up about that.
Yes.
In terms of, as you were saying, when is a life? And, it's very interesting because then, you know, let's have the death penalty. I forget who it was. Was it Steve Martin or Robin Williams who said, it's George Carlin. Oh, you believe in the, you know, throw them back when they're young and kill them when they're older. It's the fisherman's theory.
For me, if you're going to be trying to impose your Christian beliefs on my civic government, I'm going to have to bring up the fact that Jesus, the guy your religion is named after, never mentioned abortion, but did oppose the death penalty. So if you're trying to criminalize abortion in his name when he didn't weigh in on it, but you support executing people, I don't need to take your opinions on religion seriously anymore.
Yeah. I had a different total question, but after this nice young lady,
I know you wanted to talk about Gaza, right? Something light.
Yes. it was actually kind of weird. You have music, appreciation in your background, correct?
A little bit. Yeah.
Okay. So I was listening to a song today and it was from 1979, Pink Floyd, The Wall. And the song is called Waiting for the Worms. Mm-hmm. And it's a man talking about very specific, nasty things.
Fascism.
And waiting for the worms to come. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to say some bad words, but they're not.
I know the song and I know the movie. This is in the story. This is when the rock star character of Pink begins to have his mental breakdown and envisions himself as being the leader of a fascist state in a long black leather trench coat.
Yes.
A racist lunatic who shaves his eyebrows off.
And they use the word oons, and I'm not going to say it.
You don't have to say it. It says all kinds of nasty stuff.
All sorts of nasty stuff. Now, I remember listening to that and remembering thinking, these people are saying this is bad.
Yes,
and then
exactly.
I just looked it up, and I think Mr. Waters is actually not being so helpful in this direction.
Well, they've taken in the concert. He does the sometimes he comes out and does this part of the movie in the leather trench coat, and people were saying, "Oh, Roger Waters does a Nazi act in his show." And anyone who's
no. This is recently just what he has said in the media.
Which part of it? I mean, he's criticized the civilian government of Israel for a long time. I've been very surprised at the pro-Putin things Roger Waters has said as someone who's been a fan of his for a long time. But what is which recent Roger Waters comments are you referring to?
You're more well informed. That's why I was calling you, because confused, because I always thought that this is something that was like, oh, he's a nice person. And he does not like fascism and icky things. And now it's again finding out that somebody is saying these things, and it's somebody you were like, oh, I thought this person was well knowledgeable, and they're it's not cool.
Well, yeah, but also Roger Waters' case, he came out and after what happened after the atrocity on October 7th, where these Hamas criminal Nazi terrorist thugs attacked Israel civilians. I'm not a fan of Netanyahu at all, but Hamas is also evil. Waters pushed that it was a false flag, that it might have been. He never said it was, yet it might have been a false flag, that Israel might have staged all this to try to justify raising Gaza. And he lost
his
record deal with BMG.
May I interrupt you for a minute,
please.
Mr.
Yeah, but that's what got him dropped by his label.
Just in case anybody's listening, could you please define what false flag is? I always get confused by that. I don't know what it means.
Oh, sure. Well, he was talking to Glenn Greenwald, and which is always a sign something's going wrong. But
I don't know what that word, that phrase means.
Oh, okay. A false flag it means that it was a staged operation, that Israel was actually behind it, that Israel did this because they wanted to go into Gaza and have this devastating siege and have these airstrikes and kill everybody and take the land. And so he didn't say it was a false flag, but he did push the false flag conspiracy theory that maybe it was. And that's not cool. That's not cool to me. And so BMG dropped him as a client. After that, that's what I think you're referring to. I'm not sure. Roger Waters gets in trouble like every other day for something. I try to defend him when it's right, when it's unfair, but I call him out when it's not. And that was not cool any more than his pro-Putin comments were cool.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for explaining that to me. I hope
thank
I haven't
so
interrupted the flow of your show.
Are you kidding? I love this conversation. Thank you, Catherine.
Okay.
Thank you so much. It's
all
fun
right.
to talk about Roger Waters, because that's an example of an artist that I've admired a long time, and I've admired how independent he is. I don't like all the music. Some of the stuff I liked as a teenager, I don't like as a grown-up. But I've always respected how outspoken and brave he is. I've seen him live. And what do you do when it's an artist you admire and they start saying things that just I can't possibly defend? I can't. And so, you know, he's crossed some lines for me as well. I still think he's a great artist. I would interview him and have him on the show in a second to talk about these issues. But yeah, I'm not so loyal to any artist that I'll turn off my morality for them.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I appreciate
your
time, and I hope you have a fantastic rest of your show.
I appreciate you. We'll see. I mean, it can only, you know, we'll, it's me. I'm still hosting it. So how good can it get? 866-997-4748 is our number. Andrea is on the line from Colorado. Andrea, thank you for your patience on hold. Welcome. You're on Progress.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
I sure can. Hi.
Commiserate with a couple of your other callers, the one two ago that has a lack of courage when she calls in, or if she ever had. I have before, but I lose my courage.
Well, I do too. I used to call into like the sports channel to talk about the Mets, and I remember how nervous I used to be when I would do it. And I'm so grateful anytime anybody does. So thank you so much.
Well, I took a break from the news, but I still listen to your show when I can. And then my daughter, I'm a musician and a classical musician, and my daughter, who is also a classical musician, recommended a book, Symphony of the City of the Dead, Dmitri Shostakovich and the Siege of Leningrad by M.T. Anderson. It came out in 2015. And so in the last couple of weeks, I read it, and then it just made my head explode. And I think that we need more talk about who Stalin was and who Hitler was.
Yeah.
I don't think we have as much talk about Stalin because we didn't have any information for a long time, until the 2000s at least. But this book about...
I also think Hitler has taken a lot of Stalin... I think Hitler's taken a lot of Stalin's luster away because Hitler's atrocities were so revolting and Stalin was an ally. So I think it took a bit longer for our culture to catch up with the atrocities of Stalin.
Stalin was just an opportunist. He was Trump. As I read this book, I was like... Good Lord, this is Trump. And so as I wanted to stay away from the current news, I couldn't because Trump is Stalin. And
that's interesting.
We
need
to talk about who Stalin was. And he was a diabolical lunatic who was nothing more than just wanting grandiose accolades and power.
That's right.
And, you know, he had the chance to have an alliance with the British and the French, and they thought he was a lunatic, so they weren't serious. And so then he was like, okay, I'll go with Germany. And he basically invited Hitler into Russia to decimate them. I mean, he gave them the codes, basically.
Yeah.
Like, here's where we keep our resources. Here's where
that's what that book's about, right? The book's about Hitler surrounding Leningrad.
Yeah, and it's horrific when you read it, and it's about, you know, that's Trump and Putin, basically. It's like, and it talks so much about how Stalin admired Hitler and his ability to just execute his rivals, and he just thought that was so cool and funny almost, and it was such a horrific description. And then on the other hand, the book talks a lot about Hitler's motivation with the siege of Leningrad, and he literally brought in a nutritionist to see how long it would take to starve the population so they wouldn't have to waste armament on bombing the city.
That's
once
right.
They had destroyed their transportation and their inroads and
you're right.
and all their food sources. And he was content that it would only take 4 to 5 months for the population to starve to death because he just viewed them as subhuman. And all he really wanted was their resources.
Yeah.
And it just.
Yeah. Where do we see something like that today?
It's so prescient and horrifying. And I wish.
Starvation as a weapon of war. Starvation as a weapon of war. And it's illegal, and it's illegal for us to help any country that's using starvation as a weapon of war.
Yeah, and I know you have talked a lot about this, and that's what triggered me as I listened to your show and I read this book. And I just think we need to talk more about history and these
I agree.
Incredibly diabolical players that influenced what happened. And you know, we say, like, oh, Trump is... you know, we have to be careful because he's just a leader and because a lot of people are signing on to what he says that means that there's a bigger problem in America, but he's diabolical. And, you know, when Stalin...
He uses the same language as Stalin and Hitler.
Right, absolutely. He was more Stalin-like, honestly, because I think Stalin was more stupid than Hitler.
Yeah, but Stalin was, you know, enemy of the state, you know, and I also think, if you really want to know, I think he's more Silvio Berlusconi-like than Stalin or Hitler. I think there's a big level of just corrupt criminal clown who bit off more than he could chew.
Yeah, but anyway... when Stalin died finally from a stroke and no one knew he was dead for like 24 hours because he'd given this order, no one disrupt me in my bed chambers. anyway, like immediately things changed. Now, granted, it wasn't great, but it was better than under Stalin. For the most
Have you seen the film The Death of Stalin? Have you seen the movie The Death of Stalin?
No.
I'm really happy for you.
You have to
see it. It is maybe the funniest movie of the last decade. The Death of Stalin by Armando Iannucci, who did Veep. It's brilliant.
We need to talk more about him because he is Trump.
We need to talk about all the authoritarians because the patterns are there. And if we all lived for 400 years, we'd all be a lot better at spotting the signs. But we don't. So this all seems very new. When in reality, what happened on January 6th was Hitler's beer hall putsch. You know, it's the time that they almost got away with it. And next they got away with it. So I completely agree with you. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, it wasn't 400 years ago. It's within, you know, our parents' generation, and it also explains why Putin can now say to the Russians, he can just say the word Nazi, and they all freak out and go, "Oh, right, okay, whatever you say, we'll do anything to get rid of, Ukrainian Nazis," because the Nazis were welcomed initially into Ukraine because Stalin was such a tyrant that they thought, well, Hitler could certainly be better than Stalin.
But don't forget, I got to hit a break, I'm afraid. But don't forget, there's also Nazis in Russia, and there's Nazis here, too. There's Nazis everywhere. We got to fight all the Nazis in every society. We have to hit a break, but I thank you so much for the call. We'll be back in just a moment with comedian Paul Mercurio and your calls at 866-997-GRIT. This is Progress.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This is SiriusXM Progress. I'm John Fugelsang. Thank you for being with us. You know, I really miss having our comedian friends on the show all the time when we were in the daytime and we'd drag them into the studios. Right now, I got to get our friends to come late at night and be on Zoom to talk to us, unless we're in L.A. But right now, I want to welcome back to the show one of my favorite comedians. Paul Mercurio is an Emmy Award-winning and Peabody Award-winning comic who's worked on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart and The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. And he made recurring appearances on The Late Show and many other shows. You've seen him on CBS Sunday Morning, Fox News, HLN. He had a terrific Broadway show last year called Permission to Speak, which is an incredibly creative and innovative show where he talks to the audience and finds stories and manages to take a bunch of strangers, put them in a room, randomly accost them with a microphone, and turn the place into a tiny room where everyone is cheering. Frank Oz, the legendary director from, of course, Yoda and the Muppets and Dirty Rotten Scoundrels and Bowfinger and Brando's last movie, directs it. And Paul is bringing his show to the Marcus Center in Milwaukee and the Music Hall in Tarrytown in the next couple of weeks. What a pleasure. Welcome back the great Paul Mercurio to SiriusXM.
John, my friend, it's great to see you again. I miss being in the studio with you, that energy, and when we do the round table, and we got to make that happen again.
When we do the show in LA, I do that because it's still a decent hour and people, you know, can come, and here people come to Times Square and get stabbed at this hour to do my show. So not as often as I'd like. Mr. Mercurio, I don't do justice to how original your show is. You really do a show that ran on Broadway where you don't do all that much prepared text. You come out and talk to the audience, and then you get the audience to talk. And it's incredible that what sounds like reverse crowd work wound up being an incredible evening of theater that is different with every performance.
Thanks. I mean, you describe it great. Can you just come on the road with me and do these for me? And then I'll just say that what that guy said. Yeah, I mean, it was born out of sort of the crowd work stuff, but I never really liked doing crowd work because I always felt like it was kind of fake. Like it's that whole, like you talk to somebody about their hat, but you don't really care about their hat. It's just, yeah. The comic wants to pretend or make the audience believe they got this brilliantly written 2-minute bit about a hat that they just came out of their mind. I just started talking to them, but then really talking, like getting a second and a third and a fourth answer, which took us down these really cool rabbit holes, and you realize that everybody's got a story, and that's how it started. And you really described it perfectly. Like, I have an opening monologue and I explain the premise of the show, which is that we're nameless, faceless, disconnected, and at times divisive. And especially now in an election year, the show's kind of taken on like sort of a new meaning and message. Yeah. And, but we realize that, you know, if we just let our guards down and we just share some stories, we realize we're all in this boat together, and while we're kind of living up screwed up lives, trying to do the best we can. And then maybe you won't see that person on the other side of the aisle as the devil, but just another guy that also has a dog that shits on the carpet all the time. And then once you see that, then maybe you'll listen to their views about politics.
Exactly. I mean, totally.
Unfortunately, the days of William F. Buckley and Gore Vidal having cogent, albeit at times hostile, debate are gone. So no one will really even entertain another political thought if it doesn't match theirs. So this ended up just being something I fell into. And then Frank Oz saw it and said, we really need a show like this now. And so he got really behind it, and it's been really cool. And the stories have been crazy. They've been amazing.
I mean, what I love is I agree. Our commonalities outweigh our differences. Most of us get along just fine with people with different views. Every day, millions of us work with and live with people we don't agree with politically, and we don't hate each other. And people of different backgrounds getting along never get on the news. So if anything, I think your show reminds us of that common humanity and how funny it is. I'm sure you get a broad range. I mean, you're literally doing a piece of theater, but you're also a mainstream comedian. So you must get every stop on the political spectrum at your show.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because it actually worked, because we're finding after the shows, people are hanging out. Like, we have to kick them out of the theater most of the time because they just start talking to each other. And yep. There was actually a couple of times that like political rivals were in the audience. And one of these happened just outside of Chicago, and they never got along. They lived in the same community. And then I brought one of them on stage, and the other person started talking to him after the show. And then that person that was on the receiving end of that conversation came up to me later and goes, that guy hasn't talked to me in 10 years because we're like opposite. And they had made plans to go to dinner after the show, like the following week. So it's really working in a weird way. But I think you and I are a lot alike as performers. You never want to force your agenda on somebody. I just literally say, this is going to take on a life of its own for the night. It's going to reflect real life, which I love because it's unpredictable. And life is imperfect because we're imperfect and complicated. Mm-hmm. But in those gray areas, in that complication and in that imperfection, that's what's interesting in life. Life would be boring if it was just black and white.
Yeah.
You know, you're a parent, I'm a parent. We've made mistakes about parenting. We've done some things we regret with our kids. In my case, having him. No. And
I mean, I got to say, Paul, I aspire to be more like you. But in my case, half my act is forcing my opinions down the audience throat. And the other half is letting them know where to go for their refund. So I aspire to be Nelson Mandela like as you. By the way, have you seen any comedians say anything funnier than Donald Trump comparing himself to Nelson Mandela? Just curious.
Listen, I think he's on to something, because I always saw Art of the Deal as a natural sequel to, Long Walk to Freedom. I really think there's a parallel.
I'm willing to give Trump 27 years in jail and see how it plays out.
I was thinking of that today. I'm like, man, if that comparison could come true, we lose him for 27. That's going to be really great. I mean, you know, listen, let's be honest. Like, we got to be fair to Trump. I mean, his idea of a peaceful protest that she believes in is to, tweet and post hate speech on social media while he sits on a golden toilet. So he's into his own form of peaceful protest. But
man of the people.
The idea of, like, if you think about it, though, being on The Apprentice is much like being on Robben Island. And in a lot of ways, it's worse because you had to deal with and fire Gary Busey. So you can see that was... which is worse than breaking rocks. But then I love that, he's compared himself to Lincoln. Mm-hmm. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Which I thought was really interesting.
He's been treated worse than Lincoln, who caught a bullet, and Trump still had it worse.
Right, exactly. It's like, yeah, but he didn't run fast enough. That was his problem. That's what Trump would say. But, Lincoln had his trusted advisors like Seward and Chase, and Trump had his, Sidney Powell, Rudy Giuliani, and the MyPillow guy. So there's a perfect
League of the Disbarred. I love it. But,
of the Disbarred, that's great.
Your whole show is about breaking down the barriers, right, and reminding us of our commonalities, which I always believe. But when you come to something like this issue of abortion, I mean, that, not that people tell abortion stories at your show, but that's the sort of issue that sort of seems like, well, we may never actually find common ground on it. And of course, Donald Trump yesterday reversed course on his plan to support the 15-week ban. Mm. And now he said he wanted to go to the states, and suddenly the Arizona Supreme Court says, OK, we've decided for the women of the state. A bunch of men in dresses have decided no, ladies. Aside from the fact that this is scary, there's a lot of comedy here. There's a lot of irony here. It's a topic that's hard to make funny, though, isn't it?
It is and it isn't. But if you go for the honest point of view, I think it always works. Like, it's funny because it's in what he didn't say in that little speech where he did not support the ban. He did not come out and say what he defines as a legal abortion. Well, that's not true. A legal abortion for him is anybody he gets pregnant anytime. Boom. You're good. But, I think he believes in a fetus's right to build a wall around the womb. I really believe that that's the core belief that he has. And I also don't think he wants to see abortion happen because, he doesn't want to be less popular around fetuses. He's very needy.
His party's not really fans of them once they pop out. As soon as they stop being fetuses, they get a lot less sexy to Donald Trump's party.
Exactly. But they do have good tiny hands to build golf courses on Mars for him. So there's that.
I actually thought that Trump, it was too little too late, but I thought he made a smart call in the sense of saying it should go to the states was what he was saying back in 2016. And it actually seems like the smartest possible call, but it seemed like it made nobody happy because it was just another way of him dodging taking a firm stance on something. And pro-lifers are furious because he's saying it's okay to have abortions in all these states. And the independent voters that he needs are furious because they don't want to see these bans in any states.
Exactly. And I also think that's a slippery slope relying on the states, because you're only as good as your weakest link. Right. So if some of these states start going just bonkers, i.e. Arizona, and a law that's, eight goes back to 130 years, and that's the law now until something gets rectified, he's on the hook for that, right? So he has to be careful. So he just committed blindly to potentially 51 bad scenarios. And how do you explain that away? So, I think he and the Republican Party are in a worse position today as a result of it. He would have been better off just saying 15 weeks or something. So at least he would have narrowed the focus. But
I think
that one, for me, would be a scary one. You know,
I mean, if he had said 20 weeks, he could have said that's what Europe does. You know, and no one gets abortions after 20 weeks. That would have been a cowardly cop out.
Yeah, exactly. But like, at least he would have copped out in a way that would it would have sort of at least helped him in some way. And, you know, I don't know, maybe it's part of his initiative to keep babies in initiative, you know, kind of a la the immigration mess. But, you know, I think that what scares me about all of this is like how we run the potential of normalizing that he's an autocrat, right?
Like, yes,
because we're litigating this election like we normally do, which is, you know, do you want smaller government? Do you want the health care for your child, et cetera, right? Those traditional lines of sort of demarcation between Republicans and Democrats. But what we're forgetting is the guy's an autocrat and wants to be a dictator, right? And so if you play their game and get mired in the weeds on these issues, you're forgetting, and by the way, the next Hitler right here. Like, you know what I mean? Like you,
yeah,
that's not an afterthought. Okay. That's like that, you know? And so what I end up, what worries me is like, you know, if you normalize that and I don't think the Democrats are ringing the bell enough on that issue.
I agree.
They should be hammering that home as issue number one instead of going, this, that, the other thing, taxes, small government, et cetera, et cetera, healthcare. Because the choice is like, you want good healthcare or do you want dictator Trump? Like, do you want to be forced to wear your hair like that and sort of paint yourself orange and all of that nonsense? And that to me worries me about the Democratic Party. And I don't know if they're getting it. I don't know if Biden's getting it.
I don't know. I mean, I think we'll see it. I think it's going to be a very interesting couple of months. But I want to shift it back to permission to speak before we have to hit our break, because I want to ask you a question about how you get people to open up. You actually get some of them to come up on stage with you. And I would imagine that people are especially self-conscious if they're not performers when they're in that position. But like, the most recent clips, you've got people to come up there and tell their coming out stories or how they hid their sexuality. And you had this 95-year-old lady tell how she met her husband. I mean, it's so diverse. Is there a secret you have found to getting people to trust you that soon in front of strangers and open up their secrets?
I think, you know, as a performer, and especially as a stand-up, you know, I think audiences may not be IQ smart, but they're intellectually and emotionally smart. So they can sniff a nasty person or a bullshitter a mile away. And I think I'm a decent person. I'm not perfect. And I think they get that vibe that it's not a Rickles thing. I'm not making fun of anybody. It's just, we're just going to talk. I think what the monologue does is creates this safe space of like, just everybody take a breath and just say what you want to say. Just this is the one place in our lives now you can say whatever you want to say, right? And it never gets into nasty political speech. It ends up just always being personal. And so then I just start talking to them. And I can ask any question I want if it's an honest question, you know? And so as long as it's honest and it's not coming out of, you know,
you're not trying to sell anything or push any agenda other than an entertaining story.
Right. And like I had a guy in Chicago, and the cool thing is this, bringing this in different cities, okay? And Tarrytown is actually the next one. The Marcus Center, we moved that date in Milwaukee till October, but the next one's April 20th at Tarrytown.
Okay, great.
When you start talking to people in a community, you're a visitor in their community. So we have a clip of a guy, and I said, "What do you do?" And he goes, "I own a bowling alley," and the place went crazy. I don't know if we can play the clip or not, but
I don't have. I'm sorry, Chris doesn't have it loaded up. We're hitting a break in a minute, but can you tell us the story real quick?
Yeah, and I said, what's the name of it? He goes, Diversity Rock and Bowl. Place goes crazy. And I go, what's that? He goes, it's the most famous bowling alley in Chicago. I go, how'd you get the bowling alley? He goes, I was working in business. I was frustrated and I really wanted to do something else. So I bought a bowling alley with my friend Gary for $2. And I immediately said, you didn't have $2? You needed your friend Gary? And the whole place started laughing, right? And then I go, it's Gary. Yeah, it's Tom. Listen, there's a bowling alley. It's awesome, but I only have a buck. Can you give it? And then that led to a whole series of things that have happened at the bowling alleys. So at the bowling alley. So you have those moments where, you know, the 95-year-old woman who said, I met my husband. This was years and years ago. We were 20. He was dating my best friend. They broke up and then we started dating. And then she winked and the whole place went crazy. And they knew what the wink meant, right?
Exactly.
And so I mean, we've been having these really great conversations. Yeah. It's nice. It's been really great. Yeah.
So Paul Mercurio's permission to speak will be at the Music Hall in Tarrytown, New York on April 20th and soon at a performance space near you. Paul, where do our listeners go to find out more about your work and how they can get tickets?
PaulMercurio.com for tickets. M-E-C-U-R-I-O, one R, my last name. And also on Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff, at Paul Mercurio, M-E-C-U-R-I-O, one R, my last name. And But April 20th at Tarrytown Music Hall. It's really big. Goes back. May West performed there. So nice. I'm pretty excited.
Okay, next time you're here, I want you to tell me Frank Oz stories, okay?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's great to be on, man. It was really fun.
Paul, this door is always open to you. Thank you so much, Mr. Mercurio. Chris and Thea, thank you. What a great show we had tonight. We'll be back again for some more tomorrow. This is SiriusXM Progress. Peace.